Today we are talking to Gloria Baxter. She is a professor emeritus from the University of Memphis in the Department of Theater and Dance. Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I understand that you worked at the University of Memphis for 47 years. What was your work there?
I actually just completed that 47 years this last spring. The work that brought me there, if I can do a brief story of that, was, like everyone, an inspirational teacher when I was an undergraduate. Lee Queener knew how much I loved literature. And she, I'm sure, was a great influence in my getting a great scholarship to Northwestern University. And there was a new thing growing there then, which still goes on in Chicago a lot, called narrative theater. That was where my passion got struck, is that narrative theater allows you to create original theater works from material that was not originally written for the stage. So I was learning how to stage short stories, novels, using the exact language of the author in the staging. You bring to bear all the wonders of theater, and you don't give up the integrity of the language of the author. So I began that work at Northwestern in my grad program, and that's what I've done these 47 years. And there's been an evolution, I think, of style in the style of narrative theater over that course of time, different kinds of material and different approaches to it. So I've taught other kind of theater courses, but my specialization was narrative theater.
When you were doing your undergraduate work, were you majoring in theater and dance, or were you majoring in literature?
Actually, I started out majoring in accounting because I only had one relative who had ever gone to college, and he was an accountant, so I thought that's what you went to college to do. And I've actually just recently, because I was in accounting, I had to take a gen ed course in public speaking. The professor went, wow, you really ought to be on our debate team. So I really loved this. I toured all over debating. And I changed from accounting to communications. In the course of that, I now had a required course in oral interpretation of literature. And that was the inspirational teacher, Lee Queener. It's why I like to recommend to students, don't come to college already thinking you know what you want to do. So I really hadn't done very much theater at all. It had mostly been literature and solo interpretation of literary works. So sometimes I think that's some of the original of the work has been probably because I didn't know you didn't do it that way, you know, when I was starting.
But and how did this professor inspire you to go into theater and dance?
I think it was the most challenging set of courses, the materials we read, the complexity of it, the detail and concentration was just a kind of getting through to my imagination. Even years later, I sometimes say, I try sometimes to use in my grad courses material that Lee had us do as juniors and seniors, and it's beyond some current folks. She loved literature. We did poetry and novels and plays as well. So I think it was just the challenge that she really called upon.
And then what inspired you to come to Jackson Hole?
Jackson Hole, my husband and I married at 22. He was a high school teacher of literature in Memphis, and I was teaching at the university. We both were so entrenched in our work with theater. I work in the day and in the night and in the weekends. He also was very committed to the high school students. So we began to spend our intense time together in the summers, May through August, when we were not in school. We could stay in earn more money teaching summer school, but we wanted to go experience something else. Actually, we first discovered Jackson Hole. It was a group of his students that we took on a school trip out west. And as soon as we rode through this town, it was a funky little town then, Jackson Hole was, in 1972, I think that was. We loved it. And so the next year, we started coming ourselves. Just about every summer, we were here about 3 months, backpacking and day hiking in Yellowstone here. Living in our tent and going, traveling around when we could. But we just fell in love with wilderness. And we read, that's when we started reading all the literature out here. When I was here every summer, it was books that I wanted to read about Jackson Hole. But we began coming pretty regularly in 74.
On vacation.
Yes, May through August.
And then how did that develop into becoming part of your work?
It happened because we loved the Valley Bookstore, and as soon as the first book I ever picked up in Jackson Hole was Marty Murie's Wapiti Wilderness. Mine even has her signature in it because she had recently done some signing there at Valley Bookstore. We loved this book. As some of you may know, it's Marty's chapters, and it's written posthumously after Olas died. So she alternates chapters about their life in the Jackson Hole Valley following the elk in the summer. I've come to talk about it. Gary Snyder has a term that I love called books are our elders. My husband was a rural person, so he knew the outdoors of Tennessee much better even than I. I had hardly ever gone outdoors. But we didn't know about this part of the country, and that book was our guide. It would say, this is where you're going to see a water ouzel. We'd go, what in the world is a water ouzel? We'd go follow it. We followed the walks it said they went on. So just about everything I started learning about Jackson Hole, I first learned through the eyes of Marty and Olas, why they loved it, what they loved about it, both the town of Jackson Hole and the whole wilderness area. So actually every summer, we kept a journal. I have my Wyoming journals, and I always began my journals with that plaque over the mantle at Moose that she initiates Wapiti Wilderness with. I always have to look to see if I remember it, but I think you all probably know it.
What is it?
The wonder of the world, the beauty and the power, the shapes of things, their colors, lights, and shades. These I saw. Look ye also while life lasts. We loved that. And so I started every year's journal for about 10 years with that saying on the first page of my journal.
Oh, nice. I like that. So Murie had a great influence on you.
Definitely.
Well, the Murie life story.
The Murie life story did. Mm-hmm. And Olas, although he was not living at that time, was a real presence for us as well. One of the stories I like to tell is not only did I always begin my journals with that thing, and we carried Wapiti Wilderness with us everywhere we went, but there's a picture in that book that shows Marty Murie's porch on the Murie Ranch. Mm-hmm. We knew we could ask somebody and that would be easy, but we didn't want to do that. So a ritual every single summer was at least once we went, where in the world is that porch? Mm-hmm. So we would drive up and down roads and I would go, nope, that's not it. See, you know, that's not it. But we never found the porch. And so that is why some years later, which is many years later, when I got involved with the Murie Center at its beginnings, mm-hmm. we brought an excerpt of a narrative theater piece I was doing based on Wapiti Wilderness. Marty's son was there, Donald Murie. He loved the piece, and he said, I really want my mother to see this. So in some incredible circle of my life, it ended up that my students, who I had worked with for years, were performing this piece from Wapiti Wilderness on Marty's porch, and the audience was me and Marty.
Oh,
and I just kept thinking, there is something very incredible and wondrous about this whole experience, because I had now discovered where that porch was. And really, from that time forward, which I believe was 1999, the first time I was there, my connection with my artistic work in relation to the Muries and Jackson Hole and the place I've come to love so much grew from then.
It came full circle, it sounds
like. It did.
And what has your work been since then?
Since then, actually, that's what I've been working on for about the last 12 years. The first thing that happened was one of the summers I was here. Can I backtrack a little bit to tell about since then? After Jack died in 1985, it was a long time before I knew if I wanted to ever be here without him.
Right.
So one summer, I went, I'm going to spend the whole summer there by myself and what I called embrace solitude and mm-hmm. find what the place was for me now in terms of memory and presence. Again, by some miraculous thing, I read in the newspaper that Terry Tempest Williams was reading from a new book of hers called Refuge. It wasn't published yet. It was going to come out that fall. I went to that reading because she was talking about loss and how that had affected her life. I was blown away by this reading and spoke with her the next day and told her I would love to make a narrative theater piece of Refuge. For some reason, she believed that that was a good idea. So I spent about 2 years working on that, workshops in my class, thinking of how to do it. Ultimately, we did do it in 1997. Terry came to Memphis. She brought her husband, Brooke Williams, her father, her brothers, her sister-in-law, because it's their story as well. And we couldn't have been happier with that response. That's why I was back here in 1999 when someone said, oh, Nancy Shea has just begun this Miri Center. It was a brand new thing. And she had heard about the production of Refuge. And that's when the dialogue began about my trying to do narrative theater about Marty's work. So Wapiti Wilderness, that piece we called Place of Enchantment, mm-hmm. we ended up performing that in 2002 in its completed version for Marty's 100th birthday celebration. People were here from all over the country to honor Marty for that, and we did that excerpt from the book I had loved all those years. Because of that and word spread about the piece, I received a call from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I think they called me about as early as 2008, but they were planning a national event to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And since Ulis and Marty were so influential in the establishing of the refuge, they said, would you create a piece that could tour for the 50th anniversary? Yes, so we started to work on that for about 2 years. I came here. Steve Dewar was then the executive director of the Miri Center. He let me spend time on the ranch going through the archives. And very special for me was he invited me, and I did often, to sit in the room where Marty had actually typed mm-hmm. to do some of the early drafts of what I was doing for the piece. I did other research at the National Conservation Training Center, lots of workshops. And so finally, that piece, which we call Wild Legacy, mm-hmm. it was based on the story of the Miri expedition to the Brooks Range in 1956, which was a very influential event that we opened when the actual anniversary was going on, December 2010 in Alaska.
You did.
Very chilly. We went to Fairbanks and Homer and Anchorage, Alaska, played it there. And then during 2011, there were many other events in the lower 48 about the 50th anniversary. So we went several times to the National Conservation Training Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, to a big, only every 10-year kind of conference called Conserving the Future that they had in Madison, Wisconsin. And then for the ultimate full circle, I think, of my life, that second Marty piece, we presented at Center for the Arts in Jackson Hole in this summer of 2012. So really, most of my work has been on the Miri pieces, except for the work I do with my grad students when I was teaching, helping them develop pieces they were doing.
How did you choose the people that are acting, the actors themselves, who are going to travel with you and do this?
Yes. Some people in theater say what a great loss it is that we very rarely have companies that stay together for a long time. And I love that in Europe when I see companies that have worked together for a long time. The core people in a company we now have called Voices of the South, they all began as my students in narrative theater in their 20s. They're now all in their 40s, right? But we have worked together. The core people that have been in the Miri pieces, Jerry Dye and Alice Berry and Virginia Ralph, were in those Faulkner pieces. They were in the Welty pieces I took to France before. They've fallen in love with the Miri story. But I've worked with them and the people in the company, the others as well, for about 20 years, I guess. So I call it dolphin talk. I love rehearsals. Like, they understand each other's vocabulary so well of movement and music and rhythm and theatricality. So now most of the work I do is, we're a nonprofit theater company, mm-hmm. Really well established in Memphis now. It's been active for about 15 years. And pretty much those are the people I direct because they understand this form so well. And it's totally a collaborative event when we create these pieces.
Is there a course that they take at the university level that's called narrative theater? that you've designed?
Yes, I have an undergraduate level of it and also a graduate level of it that I taught for years, and then very significant collaborations. I began with just doing solo work myself, interpreting and reading aloud, you know, these pieces. But because I was in a theater department, there was a woman especially, Susan Kritzberg, who came after I'd been there about 10 years. She was a theater movement artist. She'd worked a lot with Asian dance forms, with mask work, with Lecoq techniques. So when I began collaborations with Susan, I really think that is what gave, at the University of Memphis, a very unique style of narrative theater. It's done in many different ways, but the musicality and the, I sometimes call it theater approaching the state of dance, it came from about a 15-year collaboration on lots of pieces with Susan Kritzberg. The students had training with her as well as with me and in basic acting classes. So I think they just had a great, the program had a wonderful skill set that you could get there.
And did it combine dance as well?
Yes.
So there's lots of dance movement.
Part of our BFA auditions at the end of every year was even the ones who didn't consider themselves dancers had to participate. And they had quite a few dance classes, in all forms, ballet and modern dance, more modern dance we did.
Now you're retired, correct?
Yes, so they say.
But you're still on faculty.
Yes, I can go back and teach guest courses and so forth. Actually, I fully retired 2 years ago, but I had a teaching contract for 2 more years after that, and that was kind of wonderful. I got to go teach my most loved courses, the narrative theater and theory class, and just got to do that, be with the students, and not have any committees. That was good.
What are you going to do now, Gloria?
I really, so thinking, memoir is calling to me so much. This week in Jackson Hole, Florence Shepherd had just released a memoir writing. Terry's work, of course, is very like memoir writing. And so a part of me is wanting to know, I've always loved bringing language to life in the theater. And I think that has actually been my gift, which is the thing I love in the language, the rhythm of it, the cadence of it, the meaning of the words, just sound is what I've tried to embody on the stage. But now I'd kind of like to do some writing myself. I have kept journals years I've lived in Paris and also every summer when I was here. But this time I came out this summer to begin writing and I let myself bring only blank paper.
That's a good idea.
And I just want to see at this point in time all the literature I've been drawn to. I loved Florence Shepherd's book that just came out, Sometimes Creek. Terry's book, when I first loved Refuge, I said, this is how I would like to write. I call it literature with permeable boundaries. Internal life and memory and external event, there's a fluidity that hardly knows the difference between inside and outside, vision and reality. So I'd like to now see if I try to do some writing. I think I have no ambition about publishing because I've really spent my life in theater, but I just want some time with my thoughts, I think. So I'm beginning this year to really focus on just myself and the page.
I wish you had an example to read to us.
Me too.
Because that would be really interesting to understand the kind of literature that you're expressing. The cadence and the...
Yes. There's one I send to people a lot about why the Grand Teton, that particular mountain, is for some reason the center of my soul. I never tire of looking at it, and I've written things comparing it to, Monet's cathedral paintings, where you do 4 different variations on it in different kinds of light. And it seems like every time I'm here, I just have to sit in front of that particular peak and understand something. It just implies so much to me. Wyoming to me is more than a state. It's like really being able to be aware you're on planet Earth. And something about knowing how old that granite is, that animals from the Pleistocene, like those bison, are walking around out there on Antelope Flats. Those are the kind of things I'll tend to write about, or kind of the spiritual values and sense of time that I have when I'm here.
When you met Marty, mm-hmm. what nugget of wisdom do you think you received from her?
By the time I did get to meet her, she was still very present, but not very talkative. And I think one of the high points in my life was Nancy on my first visit. That was after we had performed on the porch. She said, just go in and talk. And I went in and said, I really want to create theater out of this book of yours, and told her how long I had loved it and that I really wanted to honor her and Olas. And I couldn't tell if she was really hearing. And then all of a sudden, she looked up at me when I said, and I'm going to do my best. And she said, more power to you.
Oh, that's great.
And so I gave her a nice hug, and that was very, very nice. But I think sitting with Marty, even in her living room, you just have such a sense of what the context of her life was. Mm-hmm. Books, books, books everywhere, which I certainly noticed. And the typing in the back, I loved seeing all that. So it just gave me an aura about her when I was there.
That's wonderful. When will you return to Jackson?
I'm sure sooner than I imagine. I hope maybe next summer. This year, interestingly, because of my interest in writing, I've spent 3 weeks here earlier this summer and 2 weeks again just now. And most of that was bringing my blank paper to see what is the place in the present for me. And one of the things is, when Jack and I came, we were trying to have our time to really have a good time that's not night and day working, and it was wonderful. Now I actually begin to know the community in Jackson, and I love that community. I keep saying to myself, there's something in common, these environmental folks and naturalists and the scientists have, that's in common with a theater sensibility that really attracts me to be here. I feel at home. But I'm also going to spend a month in Paris this winter, because that's another place I lived with my husband on 3 different years that we lived there. And I want to just go be there for a while and go take my blank paper again, mm-hmm. and say, memory informs every moment of your life, but what will I experience when I'm there now? I'll be 70 this December. Wow. And so I'm in the midst of kind of celebrating all year long.
All year long.
Are pretty important for me. It feels like a wonderful kind of transition time with the schoolwork that I have dearly loved, really being at a formal end. I've told the young ones, the 40-year-olds at Voices of the South, that I'll always be there to keep supporting and assisting, but I want them to be originating the work now. So a part of me, it's a whole year of exploration with great mm-hmm. enthusiasm for mm-hmm. it, actually, and being here in the Tetons and spending that time in Paris is, I think, going to feed what it is I want to write about. Actually, when I am here, there's a place Lynn Dalebout, who lives here, introduced me to a couple of years ago, sitting by Cottonwood Creek at a certain point that has 2 different stream feeds that come in from opposite directions. And at exactly this curve, they join and become like a really fast-flowing creek after that. Mm-hmm. So I've sat every summer I come now, I go sit and just look at that place. And that's what is totally involving my imagination now, is confluence is the word, that Paris, the Tetons seem very different. Theater and backpacking seem very different. But all of a sudden, all of those streams of my life seem to have become a single river that's deep and flowing. That's what I want to write about, is this confluence. And how does your life happen like that? That right. everything begins to suddenly have everything to do with one another.
Right.
So I like that.
Your journey becomes your path.
Yes, I think so.
That's right. Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Gloria. Thank you for being here.
Okay, thank you. I really enjoyed it.